Okay. Good evening, everyone. This is the third of four classes in the Discovering Buddhism module, Samsara and Nirvana. And so please remember, next week is the last class. Do we have anyone who's here for the first time tonight? Okay, a couple of people. Okay, glad to have you here. Anybody here for first time at Kadampa Center? Okay. So we'll begin with some meditation. And I appreciate everybody's effort coming out tonight on this cold night. I know everybody's got a lot going on with their holiday plans, but we can just set all that aside for the time we have together here. So we'll begin with a simple concentration meditation. Begin by checking your posture, starting with a back that's a little bit straighter than you normally sit. Not rigid, but definitely a little bit straighter. Your head is straight on your shoulders, maybe just a couple degrees in front of the vertical. Eyes are either just slightly open, letting a little bit of light in, or very lightly closed. Jaw is loosely closed, not clenched. Tongue is on the ridge above the upper teeth. Shoulders are down, not hunched up around your ears, but down and back a little bit so your chest is a little bit open. Upper arms are away from the sides of your body. Right hand on left, with thumbs touching slightly below the navel. Legs in a position that you find stable and non-distracting. If you're on a cushion, it's best to sit a little bit towards the front of the cushion, not in the middle, but towards the front, so you're tilted forward a little bit. If you're sitting in a chair, don't lean back in the chair, but sit up. Feet either flat on the floor, or you can place a cushion underneath your feet if that's more comfortable. So scan your body and identify any sources of tension or discomfort, and wiggle them out or deal with them now so that they're not bothering you when we begin the actual meditation. And to help settle the mind, we'll do a very simple version of the 9-round breathing. There are many different versions of that. This one will just close our left nostril using the right index finger or middle finger. Really doesn't matter. Take 3 deep breaths in and out through the right nostril with the stomach expanding on the in-breath so the diaphragm is pulled down as we breathe in. And then the stomach comes back to our spine on the exhalation. Then we'll do 3 breaths with the left nostril, and then 3 breaths through both nostrils. And now we allow our breathing to return to its normal pattern. And we begin the meditation by setting our motivation. Certainly each of us put some effort into coming here tonight. The weather's not the greatest. There are a lot of other things we could be doing, but we decided to come here. Whatever motivation brought us here is fine. If it's just out of curiosity, great. If we just wanted an hour of relative quiet during all the hubbub of the season, that's fine. We want to develop a little inner or personal peace. That's fine. But said that the best motivation, i.e. the one that produces the greatest results, it's what's referred to as the bodhicitta motivation. The motivation that even doing something as ordinary as coming to Kadampa Center for an hour tonight and meditating and discussing is done to develop my mind in a way that I become of greater benefit to all living beings. And that may not be a natural way to think. It probably isn't a natural way to think for most of us. Even if it's effortful or forced out, it's beneficial to think in that way. So let's just take a moment and set our motivation. And having set our motivation, we now begin the actual meditation. A simple concentration meditation. A way of training the mind. We take the mind and place it on the breath. And by breath, I'm referring to the tactile physical sensation of breath moving in and out through the nostrils. So there's the breath moving in and out through the nostrils and the mind perceiving that tactile experience. Breath and consciousness perceiving breath. Nothing more, nothing less than that. Absolutely no duality. It's as if mind and breath are of the same nature. We're not counting the breath. We're not thinking about the breath. We're perceiving it directly. Every time the mind leaves the breath to a thought or a memory or another tactile sensation or whatever, we set that aside and come back to the breath over and over and over again. And we can end our meditation by doing a brief dedication. We acknowledge that we've done something positive, and we rejoice in that. And we dedicate the positive energy that's been created, the beneficial imprints that have been made on our mind stream, to the benefit of all living beings. Okay, samsara and nirvana. Just to review a little bit, what is samsara? Anybody want to give me a definition of samsara? Being okay. Mm-hmm. So we think of it as a cycle of birth, old age, sickness, and death, rebirth, going through it again and again. And what's the what else is important about it? What's the other thing about it? Well, it's uncontrolled, okay? It's not voluntary. It's out of our control. It's controlled by our karma, but it's involuntary. This being forced again and again to go through this cycle: birth, old age, sickness and death, birth, old age, sickness and death. And, as you said, the nature of that cycle is in its essence of suffering, if we're willing to be honest and look at our experience closely. So that is samsara. The more you understand it, you wonder why in the world did I name a perfume after that. Not very attractive, but... yeah. And then nirvana. What's nirvana? Liberation from samsara. Okay. It's not complete enlightenment, but it is freedom from samsara, from personal suffering. It is the complete end of personal suffering. To become a Buddha, you have to go on and develop compassion. But nirvana is the end of personal suffering. So the Buddha gave us this tool of what he called the wheel of life to explain why we are stuck in the cycle of samsara, what keeps us in there, and how to get out of it. And just to review what we talked about last week, we have the wheel here. This is Yama, who's referred to as the Lord of Death, in that life is within the limited by death. He's holding the wheel with his hands and feet. Birth, old age, sickness, death. So what they're said to represent. Here at the hub of the wheel, what do we have depicted at the hub of the wheel? Anybody remember? The three poisons or three afflictive minds. And what's the iconography we have here? Pig is ignorance. Snake is anger. And the chicken is attachment. Okay, so that's the hub that turns this wheel, with ignorance, the pig, being the ultimate root cause of what keeps us in samsara, what causes our suffering. And then on this side we have people going upwards. They're going up towards a figure of the Buddha. Then on this side we have people going downwards towards some horrifying looking figure. What's that represent? Anybody want to take a stab on that? Not quite. Yeah, okay. These people are going into a favorable rebirth. These people are going into an unfavorable rebirth. We've all been in both those positions infinite times, if we accept the idea of countless previous rebirths. What makes a rebirth favorable? Well, that's one. But why do we call a human rebirth favorable? Yeah, because we can study spiritual development. If we're card-carrying Buddhists, we can say because we practice Buddhism. But a human rebirth, which is depicted here, or a rebirth in the God realm, which is very pleasurable, or the demigod realm, it is easier to practice for spiritual practice to develop your mind. The unfavorable rebirths, it's more difficult, and those are the animal realm, the hungry ghost realm, and the hell realms. Okay, not impossible, but much more difficult to obtain any spiritual realizations. So we've cycled around here. You can go from the God realm straight to the hell realm. There's no order that you go to when you're being reborn. You can go from human to animal, human to hungry ghost. You can move in any way, depending on the karma that you've created. But samsara, you're going back and forth between the realms continuously. Up and down, up, up, down, down, you know, any possible combination under the control of your karma. It's not voluntary. Okay, that's the important thing, that it's involuntary in terms of having any control over it. So that's samsara moving back and forth between all these realms, which even the God realm, if we look at it closely, has a nature of suffering, okay? All of these realms are in the nature of suffering. The goal is not to get to the God, it's like some board game, land on the God realm and stay there. The goal is to get out of this completely. Not physical places, but, you could say they're mental states. Get out of this cycle of samsara completely. The end of personal suffering, personal liberation. So then around the outer realm, we have what are referred to as the 12 links of dependent origination. Anybody remember what the first one is? Ignorance, okay? And what's the second one? Action or karma. And the third one is consciousness, okay? Then I'll go through them again. So we have ignorance, we have a blind man, action or karma, we have people making pots, so they're producing something. The third one, we have consciousness, we have a monkey and a tree. The fourth one is name and form, and we have some people on a boat. The sixth one is the six sources, and we have a building with a lot of windows in it. The next one is contact, and we have a man and woman making love. The next one after that is feeling, and this is where we have a man with an arrow in his eye. So that's feeling. Next we have craving. We have a bunch of men sitting around drinking alcohol. Then we have grasping. So we have people climbing up in a tree to grab the fruit. Grasping. Next we have becoming. We have a woman with her children there. Then we have rebirth. We have a woman giving birth. Then we have aging and death. We have people walking along a path. And then we're back to ignorance again. Okay, everybody got those? Yeah, it would really be good to try and memorize those. So they go ignorance, action, consciousness. I can't remember myself. Name and form. Six sources. Contact. Feeling. Craving. Grasping, becoming, rebirth, aging and death. Okay? So we'll start with ignorance. We talked about this one a lot last week. Ignorance, another word that's used is unawareness. What do we mean by ignorance here? How things really exist, as opposed, well, not seeing things how they really exist. We are ignorant or unaware of how things exist. We project a false way of existence onto physical phenomena, other people, and most problematically onto ourselves. We project a false way of existing. We see it and we believe in it. And we act according to that false belief. So, well, we don't see how things truly exist. We see things as existing independently, solidly, permanently. Sometimes we use the phrase from their own side. We don't see, and that's false, nothing exists that way. There is no phenomena that exists that way, according to the Buddha. Things exist interdependently, impermanently, in connection with other phenomena, and dependent upon our consciousness. Things are much more fluid, fuzzier around the edges, much more interconnected. We tend to think me here, everything else out there, that there's some sort of real, solid, external reality. And actually what the Buddha says is things are a lot less clear-cut than that. It's not like we're just imagining them, but they are dependent upon our consciousness perceiving them. And the type of ignorance that we're talking about here is primarily ignorance of the self, ignorance of how I exist. We don't see ourselves as existing interdependently with our experience. We have this false sense of an independent I. We cling to it. We cherish it. We try to take care of it. We try to pamper it. We try to preserve it. And that is the ignorance that causes most of our problems. Okay? Any questions or comments? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And she hits on a lot of that, where it's like, you know, a lot of the anger is your perception of yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If we didn't have this, that's why ignorance is in the center here, giving birth in a way to anger and attachment. If we didn't have that sense of self, we wouldn't get angry, the Buddha said. We would never get angry. Angry without that sense of self, that false sense of self that does not exist, that belief in a self that does not exist, anger would not arise and attachment would not arise. So that ignorance, that self-cherishing ignorance, is really the thing that makes this whole I keep turning. Okay? Did you have a question? Okay. Okay. This is ignorance here. Okay. Through ignorance. Oh. Just a second, excuse me. Okay, through under the influence of ignorance, we perform actions of body, speech, and mind. Okay, this is what's happening here in the second link. Actions of body, speech, and mind done under the influence of ignorance will cause suffering. Suffering for who? Suffering for myself. They may cause suffering for other people, but they will definitely cause me to suffer. So this is actions motivated by ignorance are done under the influence of ignorance, which are generally self-cherishing, non-generous, non-kind, non-loving actions, but self-cherishing actions, okay, are done under the influence of ignorance. And that's what we are. We're making all these little negative karma pots in this one. And here we're talking, in this here, we're talking in particular about what we refer to as throwing karma. Okay, and what is throwing karma? It's that very strong karma that determines your next rebirth. Okay, it throws you into the next revolution of the circle here. Okay, it throws you into one of these realms, a human realm, an animal realm, a demigod realm. It's that very strong karma. Just a casual, unkind word is probably not going to determine a future rebirth. These are those very strong negative actions, either things we do physically, killing, or whatever, things we say, bad lies, or things we think that are strong enough to throw us at the moment of death, throw us into our next rebirth. So what we're talking about here is primarily the 10 negative actions, which are, there are three of body, which are killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, okay, which is generally referred to as having sex with someone else's partner. There are four of speech,
lying.
Yeah, there's one before then, harsh speech, divisive speech, idle gossip, okay, and then the three of mind, which are anger, attachment, anger or ill will, attachment, and wrong view. Wrong view referring to what are the major wrong views? Specifically, it refers to the thinking enlightenment is not a possibility, okay, and not understanding the laws of karma, okay. Those are the two main wrong views, and also just not seeing things the way they are. Excuse me. So, the 10 non-virtuous actions, Buddha says, if you want to stay in the wheel of samsara, go ahead and do them all you want. If you just want to stay on the merry-go-round, go ahead, kill, steal, and lie. You'll pay the consequences, but it's your choice. If you want to get off, you need to stop doing those. But those 10 negative actions, those can be strong enough to be throwing karma. Okay? So here we're creating the karma, then consciousness. We think of consciousness as a stream, as a continuity. The karma is placed on the consciousness at the time we do the action. Body, speech, or mind. Okay. It's a karmic imprint. There's a word that you may use for it called chuck. It's that karmic seed that is placed on our mind stream. Then, at some point in the future, that seed ripens and throws us into our next rebirth. Throws us into our next rebirth. Now, why certain karmic seeds ripen at certain times, I can't explain. That's very complicated and not anything I'm qualified to talk about. So the seed is planted on our consciousness at one point in time, stays there, and then given the right conditions in the future, that karmic seed ripens, throws us into the next rebirth, okay? When we're thrown, so those are the first three, ignorance, action, consciousness. Okay, so then we come to name and form. Anybody know what name and form refer to? Name refers to mind. Form refers to body, okay? So this is the mind and body that are the result of that karmic seed, that throwing karma. Okay? This is the mind and body that come together as a result of that karma. And you know, it could be a horrible body, you know, it could be a cockroach body and, you know, have a great mind in it. That's a possibility. But more than likely, if you have a cockroach body, you're going to have something approaching a cockroach mind. So this is name and body. The official definition of this one, I'll read this. I don't think you need to write this down. This is kind of wordy. But name and form is the mind and body which exist in the nature of the afflicted maturation result of karma. Afflicted being, meaning under the influence of ignorance, attachment, and anger. Okay. So it's a result of afflicted karma, negative karma, during the time after the dependently arising link of consciousness has occurred and before the dependently arising link of the six sources has come about. Okay? So name and body come together as a result of the karmic seed ripening on the consciousness. Okay? Completely out of our control, under the control of our karma. We can't influence it, we can't change it. We don't have any voluntary control over it. It's this powerless sensation of being powerless under the influence of your karma, being controlled by your karma. Okay? So this happens at the moment that the sperm and egg come together in the womb. Okay? Yeah, if you're a human, exactly. Okay, yeah, you know, and in most animal rebirths, in the other realms, I'm not sure. Okay, but in human realm, it's when the sperm and the egg come together. So, mind and body are in the mother's womb at this point. Okay. Next, we have the development of the six sources. That's this building with windows. What are the six? The six sources are the six senses. What are the six senses according to Buddhist philosophy? They're the five that we normally think of, and then there's consciousness. They consider consciousness another sense, another way of interacting with the world around us, okay? So we have eye sense, olfactory sense, auditory sense, tactile sense, gustatory sense, and mental sense. Okay? No, it's not the same thing. Not the five aggregates don't correspond to the senses. Okay? Yeah, the first aggregate is body. It includes all those senses. Yeah, the aggregates are a little bit different. Okay? So, the six sources are the six organs that exist in the nature of the afflicted maturation result during the time after the dependently arising link of name and form has occurred and before the dependently arising link of the contact has come about. So this is the development of the sense organs within the womb, including the development of mental. Okay, the ability to perceive mentally. And they're referred to as doors because they enable us to contact the external world. After the six sources develop, contact with external objects arises, and that's the one down here. We have the man and woman making love. Lots of senses involved there. And contact is the... when we use the word consciousness in Buddhism, there's a sense of there being lots of different consciousnesses, moments of consciousness. So, for example, when I see this red cloth, for that experience, for me to perceive red cloth, according to the Buddhist view of things, there has to be an external red cloth. I have to have an eye organ, an eye sense that perceives red cloth, that can see it, that can perform the function of seeing it. And then I have a moment of consciousness that perceives red cloth that arises in response to that. So there are three factors in any perception. There's the external object, there's the source or sense, and then there's the subsequent or the simultaneously arising consciousness that recognizes it as red cloth. According to the Buddhist philosophy, that's the way we perceive things. It's a combination of those three things. Okay? External object, sense organ, and consciousness. And that's what produces the experience of red when I look at this. There has to be something external, has to be an organ that perceives it, and then there has to be a consciousness that arises simultaneously with those. So we have all these, they speak about all these consciousnesses arising. Everything we perceive, there's a consciousness that arises. And that whole thing is what we refer to as contact. So when we remember something, when we're not actually seeing it, the consciousness that arises is a mental consciousness, which sounds redundant, okay, through the organ of thought, but also in combination with having seen something before. So there may not be an external object in that sense, but otherwise there is an external object, okay, but these consciousnesses are arising. So that's how we perceive things. That's how we contact the world around us. Any questions or comments on what I've said so far? Yeah, Susie.
When you went back, way back when you were talking about, I think it was wrong to you.
Mm-hmm.
You said if you don't understand karma, and then you said you don't understand karma.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do they mean understand or believe or try to understand?
It means accepting the reality of it mainly. Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, to get completely rid of ignorance, you would have to see karma, and you would see it directly. You would perceive karma and actually see.
To believe that you could get to that.
It leads you in that direction, yeah.
And what was the phrase you used again?
I'm not sure.
Sorry, it's just accepting that.
That karma is a fact, yeah. It's the nature of the universe.
That's really understood.
Yeah. The wrong view is denying the reality of karma. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
So you were talking about how people are basically helpless in their karma. So does that mean they can't change karma?
Well, you can't change karma you've already created. Okay. It's there. You can try as much as possible to create good karma, and you can eliminate negative karma by purification. So, but the first thing to do is try to avoid creating any more negative karma. Try and create as much good karma as possible. But is, you know, we'll talk about this in a minute, but that's kind of, you know, when we start off in our spiritual training, it's almost like there's no free choice. You know, we're so completely under the control of the karma we've already created. But as we start to understand, study, work with our mind, the amount of free choice increases. Okay? But still, you know, when we get to be a Buddha is not under the, has no karma. Is not under the control of karma. For a Buddha, everything is completely free choice. The Buddha can choose anything, can choose to do, be, think, anything is not under the effect of karma. But for those of us who are stuck in samsara, karma is very powerful. Okay? Any other questions or comments? Okay. So, we have these six senses. that develop in the womb, they start to come into contact with the external world. What happens as soon as we contact something in the external world? As soon as I see this red cloth, what is the first thing that happens? Feeling, okay? And what kind of feelings do I have about this red cloth? What are the possibilities? Yeah, that's a, yeah. Yeah. Was that you, Kim? You can say, okay, or you can say, I don't like it. Or you can say, I don't care. I don't give a flying flip about it, okay? And everything we come into contact with, every phenomena, everything out there, every thought, every emotion is immediately accompanied by a feeling of, I like it, I don't like it, or I don't care. Pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, or neutral feeling. And if we look at, we basically go through life jumping around among those three feelings. We can rationalize them and get very elaborate and very intellectual about it, but basically we're going through life saying, I like this, I don't like that, I don't care about that. It's very, it's kind of depressing in a way. I mean, it's really infantile, but that's about, most of our thoughts can be reduced to one of those three. Okay, so when we say feeling, which here is depicted by the man with a arrow in his eye. Most of us would say, I don't like that, but I'm sure there's some people say, oh, I like that, and some people say, I don't care. Okay? But feeling arises immediately upon contact. Again, what determines those feelings? Why do some people like chocolate cake and others not? It's karma. That's completely controlled by past karma. If every time I come in contact with a red cloth, I say, oh, I like that. Red's my favorite color. That is the result of karma. Okay, these feelings of, I like this, I don't like that, I don't care about that, arise instantaneously. I mean, most of the time they happen so fast we're not even aware of them. That is determined by our karma. Again, we have no choice there when we're in this wheel of samsara. Contact immediately leads to feeling under the influence of karma. And the liking can be mild or it can be very strong. The dislike can be mild or it can be very strong. Okay? This is a really important point. Everything we come into contact with, one of those feelings arise. And the neutral feelings are really extremely rare, I think. I mean, most of them are going to be some degree of I like it or I don't like it. We rarely have a truly neutral feeling in response to anything. Okay. The next step is, let's see here, the official definition of feeling. The afflicted, again, under the influence of ignorance, mental factor that experiences the object here being suffering, happiness, or indifference, through its own capability by depending on its cause, the dependently arising link of contact. So that's just fancy words saying that contact causes feeling. Okay? The link there is very, very strong. Then the next thing that happens is craving. Craving is the mental factor that by depending on the dependently arising link of feeling does not wish to separate from its object. Okay? It's not wanting to separate from the object that you're in contact with. Okay? Craving. This is assuming it's a pleasant feeling. If it's an unpleasant feeling, it's not wanting to. It's kind of the reverse of that. Exactly. So, but it's the same sort of thing. It's that next step from feeling to craving. Okay. And there are three particular types of craving that the Buddha mentioned here. The first is the craving for sense pleasure. Okay, first we have a pleasant feeling, then we crave it. We don't want to separate from it. And this is, you know, foods we like, people we like, pleasurable objects, okay? Craving for sense pleasure. Then there's a craving to be free of fear, okay? And that's really the craving to be free from unpleasant objects. And that fearing unpleasant objects, aversion from them, wanting to be away from them. And then the third type of craving is the craving for life. And this is particularly strong at the moment of death. Wanting to stick with this body and this mind. Even though we know they've been the cause of suffering, we don't want to be separated from them. So we cling, we crave to stay with that combination of body and mind, even though we know from the teachings they inevitably are going to separate, but we crave to stay with them. Okay? And it's very interesting. George Dreyfus, who is the first Westerner to get the Geshe degree, I think he teaches at Williams College, and we've been trying to get him to come to Kadampa Center for ages and have not been successful. But I heard him talk once, and he said spiritual practice occurs at the link between feeling and craving for most of us, and that we are not at the point that where we can control the feelings that arise. That's uncontrollable, but we can start to diminish the craving. We can work on that. We can become aware of these feelings of I like, I don't like, I don't care, and begin to interrupt that progression to craving. So that's where spiritual training for most of us occurs, to try and start breaking that link there, start easing up a little bit on that. And the next link is grasping. The craving is the men sitting around drinking. The grasping is climbing up in the tree after the fruit. And that's just a more intense form of craving. Going on to grasping. And it said we grasp at sensual pleasures. And it's also said, that we grasp at wrong views, this view of ourself as existing permanently and independently. So that's something that we grasp at very strongly. And then as a consequence of that, we grasp at ourself, at this false sense of self. Very, very strong holding on to that. And then it's also said we grasp at the time of death. Okay. Any questions or comments about these so far? Okay. So this is a cycle under the influence of ignorance. Okay. It's all motivated by ignorance. So it really sounds pretty gloomy so far. Samsara is not a pretty picture. Yeah. So remember, this is what happens under the influence of ignorance. If we don't like what we're talking about, we have to eliminate ignorance. That's the way to break the cycle. Then, the next one is becoming. This is a factor existing in the nature of the maturation aggregates bound by afflictions, which is the potentiality of karma made stronger by its craving and grasping. And this is where a karmic seed on your consciousness is just about to ripen before you go into your next life. This is right at the moment. So you always see, we're already going through several life cycles. This is not just one life. This is a karmic seed that's planted on your consciousness is about to ripen just before you go into your next life.
Are they your personal notes?
Yeah, these are, yeah, okay. Yeah, these are the ones I made for this class, yeah. Yeah. Most of it's from Alex Berzin's website, okay. And then Tipton Children's website also has a lot of this stuff on it.
Berzin Archives?
Yeah, Berzin Archives, and then Tipton Children's Dharma Friendship, Dharma Fellowship Foundation, DFF, her website. Yeah. Okay. And then we have rebirth, okay, body and mind at the time of conception. And then we have old age and death, sickness, aging, sickness and death. Okay, that's where we are right now, most of us. Cause of old age and death is being born. Okay, so this is just one cycle, okay. Right now we're experiencing old age and death. We're all getting old. Okay, we're all getting closer to death. As a result of something that was probably done several lifetimes ago. At the same time, we're creating karma right now that's going to create a cycle. So there are multiple cycles at the same time. We're not just in one place. We have multiple cycles going along right now from previous lifetimes. We're creating new ones that are going to lead into future lifetimes. I think that's real important to realize. It's not like you just go around and finish this cycle and then start another one. We all have multiple cycles going on simultaneously, and we're at different points. We're all, you know, we're really at all of these. We're not, you know, we're not being born, and we're not in the womb right now, but we're at different points along here simultaneously. Okay, I think that's important to realize. Questions or comments? So we see how ignorance, not seeing the reality of how we exist, sets off this cycle through the effect of karma, and then the contact, the feeling, the craving, forcing us into old age and death. That's the wheel of samsara. It's going on over and over and over again. It's not as linear as we like to make it out. So that's one thing that makes this hard to understand sometimes. Okay. Any questions or comments? Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're not going to do that tonight. We'll do that next week. Okay. Yeah. That's. Yeah. Doing it backwards is how to get out of samsara. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. If you're out of samsara, you don't. Yeah. But what? How do you do that? You do. How do you not die? You don't get old. Okay. How do you not get old? You don't become. How do you not become? You don't grasp. How do you not grasp? You don't crave. How do you not crave? You don't have these feelings that are determined by karma. Okay, so it's not really that simple. Yeah, you just can't take the wheel and spin it in the wrong direction and say, get me out of samsara. Yeah, did you have a comment, Susie?
Yeah, it can wait.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. So let's do a review meditation on this. We'll just go through each of these and just try and get familiar with the terms and start to think about what these may mean. Let me get my notes back in order. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, this is, most of this is from Tipton Chodron's site, Dharma Friendship Foundation. You can find it there. Okay. A lot of talk. Let's just take a minute and do our meditation. Begin by checking our posture. And take a moment and set your motivation. Generate the bodhicitta motivation. And we'll do just a couple minutes of breathing meditation to allow the mind to quiet and become more focused. And now we'll do a review of the 12 links, the cycle of birth, aging, sickness, and death that we refer to as samsara, and the 12 links is the Buddha's explanation of why or how we are stuck in that cycle. And by understanding how we are in that, we begin to see how we can escape from it. And the 12 links begins with ignorance or unawareness. Primarily unawareness of how I exist. I think I exist in a way that's fallacious, not true. But this false sense of I, this self-cherishing, is the ultimate source of all my problems and is what keeps me stuck in samsara. So the first link is ignorance, primarily ignorance of self. So think for a moment about what that means. Next link is action. Every action of body, speech, and mind. Everything I think about, everything I say, everything I do. And particularly the strong actions that create what we refer to as throwing karma. Karma that forces me into the next lifetime. Next link is consciousness, the mental continuum, without beginning and without end, upon which the karmic seeds are placed. The next link is name and form. Name, meaning mind. Form, meaning body. That come together under the influence of karma at the moment of conception. And then we have the six sources, the five senses, and the mental consciousness, or mental sense, the six ways in which we interact with the world around us. And through the six sources, we experience contact. The external object, the sense organ, and the arising consciousness together are contact or perception. And every moment of contact inevitably, under the influence of karma, leads to feeling, a pleasant feeling, an unpleasant feeling, or a neutral feeling. We have no control over that. It inevitably arises as a result of our karma. And feeling leads to craving, not wishing to be separated from pleasant objects, not wishing to be near unpleasant objects. Feeling leads to craving. But as we work on ourselves, as we practice, we can start to weaken that link a little bit. That won't take us out of samsara, but that's a good place to practice becoming aware of these feelings, but not following them, not being led around by them so much. And craving can become more extreme. It can become grasping, an extreme form of craving. And under the influence of craving and grasping, certain karmic seeds ripen right before we go into our next lifetime. Grasping and craving affect which karmic seeds ripen, and that's referred to as becoming. If we've been grasping at material objects, that can determine which karmic seed ripens as we go into the next lifetime. a rebirth determined by the ripening of certain karmic seeds, and being born inevitably leads to old age, sickness, and death. All as a result of that primordial ignorance of self. Ignorance, action, consciousness, name and form, six sources, contact, feeling, craving, grasping, becoming, rebirth, aging, and death. The 12 links. And you can end your meditation by doing a brief dedication. Any questions or comments? Okay. And then next week in our last class, we'll talk about trying to spin the wheel backwards and get out of samsara. Now that we're experts on staying in samsara. And here's the homework for the week. If someone, you could pass that out. Thank you. And just remember, next week is the last class. And have a nice Thanksgiving. Thank you.